A lot of you guys probably don't know me because I'm not a member here. You might know my parents, Bill and Janet Metzger, or my brother, Luke Metzger, who's a member here, or my sister, Julianne. She's married to J.D. Copeland. He's spoken here a few times. My name is Ben Metzger, and I'm from this congregation. I grew up here. I'm in Lexington now in school there, but still have a lot of good friends here. And this evening, you probably only know about me that I'm the guy who doesn't believe in scripture readings. That's not true. Scripture readings are just fine 99% of the time. I'm actually not giving a lesson tonight. This is a trip report, which is less traditional. Usually it's a young man or Gary, who I guess could be a young man, who gets up on a Sunday evening to give a lesson, a traditional lesson. I spent 4 weeks in South Africa this summer. And that's what I'm going to be speaking about this evening. To give you a feel for the church situation there, some South African culture, and really just how the trip went, and hopefully give you some idea of the things I did there and the work that God is accomplishing there. I think that's an important thing to point out at the very beginning. These are not things that I've done or even that the preachers in South Africa have done. These are things that God is doing over there. And right off the bat, I just want to say, in case I forget later on, you can definitely pray for the work over there. It's a difficult place, and your prayers are very powerful. And it's interesting to know that they're also praying for us, because I asked that they would continue praying for all the Christians here in Kentucky, and they agreed that they would. So it's nice to know we have brothers and sisters throughout the world who are praying for us. First of all, your question might be, why did you go to South Africa? Fair question. I went with Bob Buchanan, whom many of you know. I went with Bob to the Philippines in 2004 for 3 weeks when I was in high school. And that kind of gave me a little taste for working overseas. And then I've made a few trips overseas for like vacation and school reasons the last 10 years, I guess, since 2004. And then last summer, Brian and Brad, who were here, they made a trip over to South Africa. And I spoke to them. And I was really interested in the things that they had to say about South Africa. So then, as it happened, this summer I got an internship, and it only lasted 2 months. So I had an extra month with where I could continue working and volunteering or do something else. So I spoke with the elders in Lexington. They encouraged me to take a trip overseas, and spoke to the elders here at Eastside, and they also helped support this trip. So a big thank you to all of you here for assisting in this trip. Whether or not you knew that you were doing it, you did. And this is a lot of the work that God has done, but thanks to you. You're the one who, in large part, helped me go there. So this should have special significance to you. I'm already getting choked up. Not really. I just put these slides together this afternoon, to be totally honest with you, so we'll see how this goes. Africa as... Wow, I was like really nervous for a second. The screen wasn't even on this whole time, but I'm glad it's on. Okay, Africa, of course, is here. South Africa, as the name suggests, is down here at the very bottom. And as you can see, I was actually working in Colorado out here. So it was a very long trip down to South Africa. It was a 3-hour flight from Colorado Springs to Nashville. Nashville to Atlanta was, you know, less than an hour. And then about a 16.5-hour flight from Atlanta to Johannesburg, South Africa. And then about a 4-hour drive to visit the Buchanans, which I'll talk about them more in a second. One of the questions you may have right off the bat is, are you infected with Ebola? I am not infected with Ebola, as far as I know. I mean, it hasn't... The Ebola is mainly in Western Africa here, and I was thousands of miles away down in South Africa, so that shouldn't be too much of a concern. The size of South Africa is roughly twice the square mileage of Texas, the Lone Star State. So you can see there, if you put South Africa over the United States, its relative size, that weird shape is actually another country that's inside of South Africa. It's the only country that's landlocked within another country, Swaziland. Fun fact. Here's a better map of South Africa. So I landed in Johannesburg, which is up here. And then the first 3 weeks of my trip, I stayed with Rob and Cheryl Buchanan. This church supports Rob on a monthly basis. He's been here, I think, twice maybe. And he's the full-time preacher at the White River Church there in Mpumalanga, which is the province right here. You'll see Mpumalanga.
So I was staying just north of Nelspruit, right there, for the first 3 weeks. And this is just kind of background information so you'll know where some of these pictures are taken. And then the last week of my trip, I went back to Johannesburg, jumped on a plane, and flew all the way down to Cape Town, right down here on the Cape of Good Hope, in the Western Cape province, which is just almost, it feels like a whole other country. The landscape is completely different. The climate's different. It's a whole other world down there. So those are the two places I was. First 3 weeks in White River, traveling around that area, and then the last week down in Cape Town. Just a little bit about South Africa. I don't want to bore you with numbers and details. There are about 51 million people who live in South Africa. To put that in perspective, the United States has about 315 million people, and then the United Kingdom has a little bit more than South Africa. It has about 63 million people. South Africa has a checkered past. Apartheid, you've probably heard that word before. It means racial segregation, where whites and blacks can't even communicate, they can't have any contact. South Africa had apartheid from 1948 to 1994, so only 20 years ago did they end their system of political apartheid. And so that still has a significant impact in the country. There's still some racial tensions, and still you see a lot of black people grouped together, a lot of brown people grouped together, a lot of Indians grouped together, and then white people grouped together. So that also impacts the culture and the church situation, to be frank with you. But we'll talk more about that in a second. HIV/AIDS is a major problem in South Africa. It's about 0.6% of Americans have HIV/AIDS in South Africa. Instead of 0.6%, it's about 18%, which is remarkable. So it's close to one out of five people have HIV/AIDS. It's a really bad situation there. The unemployment rate in the United States is about 6.2% right now. In South Africa, the unemployment rate is 25.5%, so about four times the unemployment rate here. Life expectancy, this blew my mind. So in the United States, when you average male and female, it's about 78 years of life expectancy. In South Africa, it's 22 years less. It's 56 years is life expectancy. And then if you think the average per capita GDP, so about how much of the national GDP assigned to each person in the United States, that's about $46,400. Average income, there it's about $10,000, so less than a quarter of what we make, the average family would make there. Minimum wage ranges from about 49 cents an hour to about 90 cents an hour, which is remarkable. I think minimum wage here is $7.25 or something like that, so quite a poor country. And there's a really big gap. There's a huge divide between the people who are really poor and the people who are very wealthy. There's a middle class, but it's much smaller than it is in the United States. The trip over there, like I said, lasted forever, it seemed. I slept and ate and then slept again and watched a movie and read and journaled and watched another movie and ate again and slept, and it just seemed like it never ended. But finally, we got over land. I think this is like over Angola, over in the western coast. And I just threw that picture because I thought it looked like Tatooine. It looks like sand dunes and desert and no water, like something out of Star Wars or something. Finally, we did land in Johannesburg, and Rob and Cheryl were there to pick me up. This is Rob in the middle there, his wife, Cheryl. He's been preaching in South Africa for most of his life. He has a background in the military as an electrical engineer. So for a long time he was employed with a secular job, and then decided to devote his life entirely to preaching full time. He wasn't raised in the church. He came out of a denomination. And then his wife, Cheryl, she was raised in the church, so she is a phenomenal lady, so kind. There are others of you here who have actually visited Rob and Cheryl. I know the Pruitts have been, Allison has been, and Stephen, and they're just phenomenal people. They're so kind, so hospitable, and just always bending over backwards to make sure all of my needs were met. I was just really impressed by Rob and Cheryl. They're two wonderful people. They have adopted two sons. Their youngest son is named Graham. I actually never met Graham.
He is a computer guy in Pretoria, which is the capital there, close to Joburg. He's like a whiz kid. He's really, really smart and has done really well. And is still a Christian. He's a faithful Christian there at one of the churches in Joburg. This is their son, Jock, who's 29. And Jock is, had a very difficult childhood before he was adopted. His parents didn't treat him well. And because of that, he does suffer some social problems and some mental problems. So at first, it was a little bit difficult for me to connect with him and, you know, figure out how to just communicate with him. But once he figured out that I had brought with me a suitcase full of American chocolate and I bought him ice cream, he was a lot happier. And we got along really well. He's a really cool guy. Jock during, I'll show you this. This is the road they live on. I might go through some of these fairly quickly. I have some slides, and I don't want to spend a long time on each of them. This is their house they've built on over the years. You can see the fence here. This is a tall electric fence that runs around their property. They have three dogs that guard their house, and then they have an alarm system. Crime is a very real problem everywhere in the country, no matter whether you're in the country, like out in rural areas, or in cities. They've had a couple people try to break into their house over the last couple years. There are people who will walk around the property at night. Like, you can go out in the morning and see footprints on your property. That's not uncommon. And so I slept uneasy most nights that I stayed with them, but they're very well prepared. And I don't say that in any way to scare people from going over. It's still a great place to go, and you'll be okay. But that's something that I take for granted here, I realize, is my safety when I'm asleep at night. I'll sleep with a fan on, you know, or a sound machine. I'm not listening for people to, like, break through my window at night. But over there, you really do. You have to sleep very lightly, and you're worried about people breaking into your house. And at night, if you have to go out and drive, you don't stop at stop signs or stop lights because people potentially would try to steal your car, you know, throw a brick through your window while you're at a stoplight. So it's a whole different world in terms of safety, and my eyes were open to that over there. I'd never really considered those things before. This was inside your house. It's the living room. Their dining room's there on the right. Kitchen's to the left. My room is in that door. My bedroom, straight ahead. This is looking out the bedroom window. They own about 8 acres of property, which is, they just call the bush. It's very wild land. They don't have any water pipes like we do here. No formal, like, system. I'm a lawyer, not a, like, a sewage guy or a plumber, but I don't know what you call that. Like, they have a well and they have a pump and they pump their water and heat their water and it pumps into the house. There's a name for that, and I'm not smart enough to know what that is. This is looking out their properties. It's really, really pretty on most days. Jock took me for a hike to kind of introduce me to some of the scenery around their house. And here, you know, you walk through trails. Over there, it's like you just cut right through the bushes. And I was so scraped up and cut up with thorns and porcupines and just lots of fun stuff. It was quite an introduction to the bush. You'll recognize one face here, Bob Buchanan there, the second from the left, came over just a few days after I had arrived with Robin Bauer. Robin Bauer is in the far left. He is a preacher down in Cape Town. Both of those men, Robin and Bob, originally intended to do some preaching in Zimbabwe, but due to some circumstances, they had to change their plans and instead came to visit Rob and me in White River. And so that was really nice. They were there for about a week, a little less, and we did a lot of work together, which you'll see in just a second. But it was nice to see a guy from Bowling Green 9,000 miles away in White River. And he did make his chocolate Coca-Cola cake for us while he was there, which was pretty nice. You know Bob, you know how good his cake and cooking skills are. The four of us men, we spent a lot of our time in a small area called Madras. It's a township. It's a very rural area, all black. There are no white people there at all. No paved roads at all. No running water. Very, very poor. This was driving into Madras. You can see the cows there. That is a very typical house in Madras. This is the church building where the church in Madras meets. Some of you would be really interested to know, last summer when Brian and Brad went over, you sent some extra money with them to distribute as they saw fit. And apparently they ended up giving some of it to the Madras church, and the Madras church built this structure with that money. So this is, when I showed this to my parents, they were like, whoa, it looks like a really old building. It's actually brand new. It's still under construction. So this is what they've built with some of the money that was sent over from Eastside. And they're really proud of this building. It's a really nice building relative to what's around it. This is inside of that building. You can see one of the Bible classes there. You can see Bob in the front row. This is the preacher there. Tolley is his name. Really nice gentleman. Has a great sense of humor. His English is pretty rough. Every time we're at Madras, we use a translator. His son, you'll see on the next slide. Tolley's just a really, really fun guy to talk to. Great student of the Bible. Hardworking. I really enjoyed getting to know him. These are two of his sons. Castro is on the left. Becky, B-H-E-K-I, Becky, is on the far right there. Castro's name actually does, if you're wondering, come from Fidel Castro, which is weird. Like, in America, you would never name your kid after Fidel Castro. So I asked, I was like, why are you named Castro? And he said, interestingly, it's because Fidel Castro was very against racial segregation, against apartheid, and was friends with Nelson Mandela. I didn't know that. And made a trip over to South Africa. And so the South Africans really like Fidel Castro. And that's why he was named Castro. Becky is the translator on the right there. He's my age. He's 26. And his English is outstanding. Like, just as good as my English. Better, probably, than my English. And I asked him one day, I said, Becky, how did you get so good at English? And he said, well, we learned it in school. I said, okay, that can't be it, because every kid here learns English in school. How is your English better than everyone else's English? And I could tell he's a little hesitant. I said, no, just go ahead and tell me. He said, well, for the last 12 years, Ben, every day I watch Dr. Phil with subtitles. So he watches the English version of Dr. Phil with the Zulu subtitles. So he's hearing the English spoken, but he reads it in his own language at the bottom of the screen. I thought that was really cool, that he was able to learn English from Dr. Phil. This is the church there at Madras. About 30 people. This isn't really all of them. There are some kids in school that day, and some adults who weren't able to make it. It's a really, really encouraging group of people. Enjoyed getting to know them. They're just some of the happiest people we've ever met. This is their nursery. I really thought this was cool. Of course, it's a small building, so they don't have a nursery like we have. They just have, this is like beside the main auditorium. They just have a little mattress and some blankets, and if the kids get tired, they just lay them down, and the kids go right to sleep. They're totally used to that, so it's kind of cool. This should really put things in perspective for me. I said they don't have running water in Madras. They all go to a pump to get the water every day. This is the restroom at the church building, and this is really, really nice in this part of South Africa. So you hike a little trail out to the outhouse, and that's the inside of the outhouse. And I debated whether or not to put that in the slideshow, but you know, I think it's good to see those things and realize that that is very standard for most of the people around the world. There's no roll of toilet paper. There's no sink or hand sanitizer. If you need toilet paper, believe it or not, that's your toilet paper. Like sheets of paper on the ground of the outhouse, that's your toilet paper. So really, really put things in perspective for me when I experienced that. This is Tolley's Bible. I just wanted to include that really quick. You can see, like, it's crazy how many notes he has and how much highlighting, underlining. Such a diligent student of the Bible. It's one of the things that really impressed me in South Africa was how eager the people are to learn, how much they learn every day. They're always reading their Bibles and asking so many questions. It's just really overwhelming. And, like, coming in as an American trying to teach Bible classes, and then, you know, I would do a Bible class for, say, an hour, and I was pretty tired after speaking for an hour. You know, it's long. Like, here, if Gary goes for an hour, you're thinking that's a pretty long sermon. But then they're like, oh, we want to ask questions. It's a Q&A period after every lesson that's taught there. And that would go on for sometimes hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours of Q&A after a lesson. And people are just constantly taking notes and asking questions. It's really, really encouraging. On the last weekday that Bob and Robin were visiting, there was a young lady there who raised her hand at the end of the Q&A and said she wanted to be baptized. Well, of course, none of them have vehicles, and it's winter, so it's the dry season. There's not a lot of water around. Nobody has a bathtub or a hot tub, swimming pool, none of that. So we all piled in the back of Rob's pickup truck,
and had to drive around the village looking for water to baptize this lady, which was in and of itself pretty interesting. You can see everybody piled there in the back of the truck. They're trying to figure out, this is Becky. He's trying to translate for us where we might find water from some of the older people in the group, trying to get some advice from them. So then we finally did, after 45 minutes of driving around, we found a bridge with a little bit of water beneath it. And you can see Bob, that's Bob, hiking down with some others. There are more people behind us. So we all went down here to find some water. This is the area where we found, and sure enough, it was deep enough. This man, his name's Masha Bani. He's the oldest gentleman of the Madras Church. He volunteered to baptize this lady. The problem is, or maybe not problem, but the interesting thing is, he's blind. He can't see anything. He's crippled. He walks with a cane. And this lady was significantly heavier than him. And it's in a current with, like, moving water. So I was thinking, like, recipe for disaster, right? Like, this is going to be really interesting. So I took a video, and I hope it's okay if I share that with you. I'm just going to switch over here really quick and see if I can do this. Wait, also, is this on? Is this on? All right, cool. Let's see if we can do this. Ooh, this volume might not be up. Okay, I don't think the sound's going to work. You'll just have to watch without sound. This sound's really not that great anyhow. They're singing hymns. You can hear them speaking in Zulu. This was a great moment. Everybody was really, really, really happy. And then he can't see her still, and he's really worried she might be hurt, so he pats her on the head to make sure everything's okay. He was really happy that she didn't hit her head or drift away in the current, I think. So obviously that was a highlight of the whole trip, was that baptism. She is Becky's wife. So there afterwards, you can see Becky and their son, Musa, is the little boy's name there. Musa was one of my favorite people the whole trip. Just a really, really happy moment to see his wife finally baptized. Her name is Mumpy, M-U-M-P-I, Mumpy. Right after we were like walking back, there's this herd of cattle that just like passed right by, which is weird, like that doesn't happen here. Then we went back, so that same week, Robin and Bob were doing some lessons at White River. So we were in Madras, that's where I've mainly been talking about so far. This is a different church, this is in White River. This is close to where Rob and Cheryl live. This is like 5 minutes from their house. And this church is more traditional. It's predominantly white. And Robin and Bob did a series of lessons there each evening and then all day Saturday, like 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock, like all day there, which was great. We really, really benefited, I think, from those lessons. And then Bob, it was always... I mean, I put this picture in because you guys know Bob so well. It was great to see Bob kind of in his element, like just in his prime, because you know around here he's great. You know, I love hearing him preach and pray and talking to Bob, but when Bob is overseas, as he is so often, he just connects so well with the people, and the people just love him, and he's so good at talking to everybody. He knows a little bit about everything, and I was so grateful and thankful that I was able to spend just some time watching Bob interact with people and learn from his wisdom. He's a really, really smart guy. Here, you wouldn't know it. He was actually in the middle of like a really difficult conversation with this guy. This guy's name is Everton, about fornication. And Everton was just so receptive and listening and asking questions. Bob was really, really shining, as I think he always does when he travels. So then, just a little interjection, like a halftime here in the middle of the presentation, just a few pictures of kids. That was, had to be another highlight of the trip, was seeing all of their smiling faces. They're always so happy and just excited and playing with just anything they could find. All the pictures from my iPhone. And the iPhone, of course, has the camera that faces forward, so you can, like, take selfies, you know, and you can see yourself while you're taking the picture. They hadn't seen those cameras before, like, where you can see yourself while you're taking the picture. And so they just thought that was the coolest thing. And that's what they were playing with here, was my iPhone. Thankfully, they didn't break it, and I still have it. So they thought that was cool. This little girl's name is Beautiful Day. She was one of my favorite with Musa. Musa and Beautiful Day were probably my two favorite kids who were there. This is Bob. Again, Bob is great with everybody, including the little kids. And then this is Musa. Musa tried on some of my sunglasses, and I don't know why. Musa would always wear his hood up. It's, you know, like 85 degrees outside, and he's wearing a hoodie every day with his hood up. He just thinks he looks cool. And with the sunglasses, he really thought he looked cool. And this kid just would not stop playing. This is a digital watch I wore while I was over there. And it beeps every time you push a button. And it was like, followed me around for probably an hour everywhere I went, pushing the button on my watch to listen to it beep, which is really funny. So Bob and Robin, they left and went on into other places in South Africa. And then brother Rob and I spent then another week going back every day. It was about an hour drive back to Madras and working with that congregation. I did a series on the fruit of the Spirit and also did a series on James. And like I said, so many good questions. I was prepared and had prepared the lessons, but they asked me some really thought-provoking questions. And just their honesty. Like, I think here in Bible classes, sometimes we're, at least speaking for myself, I'm timid or hesitant to ask questions. I think it's too easy. But over there, it's like no big deal. They can ask the most elementary question, nobody laughs or nobody feels bad for asking the really easy questions or the really hard questions. And I thought that was pretty cool. One night, this was a Wednesday evening, I was preparing to teach a Bible class at White River during the midweek study. I take that back. I think it was a Tuesday night. They meet midweek on Tuesday, not Wednesday. And one of the neighbors called and said, "Hey, your property's burning." And so we walked outside, and sure enough, you could see the smoke down in the valley. And it turned out to be a really big brush fire on the property. There you can see another picture. So we called some other neighbors to come and help. And it took all night, probably 6 or 7 hours, to put out this fire. It's a fairly common thing over there for property to burn. They did have burn breaks built into their property, so it didn't really get out of hand. I thought it was interesting, again, just kind of color this culturally. Here, if your property catches on fire, at least I think my reaction, Dad's reaction, would be to call the fire department, right? But they're like, that's the last thing. They don't really have a fire department. So you just call your neighbors, and you know how to put out fires, and you set fires close to your house and burn around your house so it won't jump that line. And then use these rubber mats to pound out the fire on the grass. It was crazy. I'd never seen anything like it. And I felt like a dumb American as I was just like running with a bucket of water back and forth trying to throw it on. But these guys had these big mats just like pounding it out. I was like, well, I just give up. So and then I just took them bottles of water and that was about it. It was cool. You can see it was really late at night. They're still trying to put out the fire. It's the mat that they use on the end of a stick. This is really cool, and this was one of the most encouraging days of the 4 weeks I was there. There's a young lady, her name's Constance, a black lady who is a member now of the Madras Church, the poor area that I mentioned. She's been a Christian probably for 2 months, 3 months maybe, and she was converted when Masha Bani, actually he's the guy who's doing the baptism, right, the old man in the river, he was in the hospital. And his nurse, he was conversing with his nurse. And he struck up a conversation about whether or not she was saved. And she said, "Yeah, I'm saved." And she started telling him about the church that she was a member of. And they ended up having a study. Even though he's blind and crippled and in the hospital, he's still studying the Bible with this young lady. Long story short, she ends up converting. She's baptized and starts going to Madras and becomes a member of that group. She's so concerned about the church that she left and about her old friends and her old church
that she talked to them and got us invited to come speak to all of her old friends at the denominational church of which she had been a member. Which is amazing, right? I mean, I don't know that I've ever heard of that happening here, which is not to say it doesn't happen, but it's incredible that she was so on fire that she decided, okay, I've learned the truth, and now I need to go tell everybody who's still living in error and still part of this denomination that we can study the Bible together and find truth. And so that was great. That was really, really encouraging. We spent probably about 3 or 4 hours in one Bible study there with a lot of the members, going through some very basic things about the church and promises and that sort of thing. That's the inside of their building. We got to use their building and everything. Rob's walking there. I had a video of Becky doing translating into Zulu and Rob preaching, like a 30-second clip. Since the audio is not working, we're just going to skip over that. I don't know if that's too important. If afterwards I'll be outside, you can certainly watch my phone if you're interested in hearing that. They even gave us lunch. We took a short lunch break. This is a very typical meal that the black people will eat in the poor areas. It's a piece of chicken, a small piece of chicken there on the right. And then the white stuff is something called pap, P-A-P. And it's basically like grits. It's ground corn. It's sticky, there's not much flavor to it. Typically, they'll have some sort of gravy or something they'll put on that. But it feels like you're filling your stomach with a concrete block, like it really fills you up. Not that I'd know what it tastes like to eat a concrete block, but that's how I would imagine it tastes to eat concrete. And that's not to say that it was bad. I'm really thankful they were able to feed us, and that was very kind and generous of them. But again, kind of like the outhouse that I mentioned, this really put things in perspective for me, because there are literally millions and millions of people in South Africa who 7 days a week, two meals a day, are eating pap and maybe a piece of chicken, but definitely pap. This is their staple. Going through the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A when I got back, it's just so much different, to really think about how many people don't have this opportunity to go through a drive-thru and get a nice chicken sandwich and waffle fries. I mean, this is pap every day. This is the group, some of the Christians from Madras, and then some of the others from the church that we went to study with. It's kind of a group picture at the end. They're really happy. This guy was like so happy. And then you see Becky and Musa with his hood up, not surprised. And then this is one of the older men of the group of the church we're studying with. He's their pastor. And he asked them some questions and seemed to really take to heart the things we were saying. And realized that he didn't have biblical answers to some of the questions that we're asking. So you can pray specifically. This is the church at Oakley. I'm not exactly sure what denomination they are, but these are people, believers in Oakley, who are trying to find the truth. Maybe you could add that to your prayer list tonight as well. I'm sure they would appreciate your prayers. Sadly, towards the end of my third week, about midway through my third week, we received news that Cheryl's mom had passed away suddenly. So I was staying with Rob and Cheryl. Her mom had passed away suddenly. So I had to cut my trip short with Rob and Cheryl. And I was already planning to go down to Cape Town to meet with some of the Christians down there. And I decided to go on and bump my flight up so I wouldn't have to, be around their house. So they're trying to make funeral arrangements and all those sorts of things. It was a very tough time for the Buchanans. So I spent a weekend, this was after Cheryl's mom passed away. I spent a weekend with another family there in White River. And these are great people. This is the Coetzee family. They're all four Christians. This is Dylan is the oldest. Jason Lee is their other son. And Jenny and Philip. The Coetzees are a great family there in White River. And they took me out just to do some sightseeing really quick, which was nice to have a break, because Rob and I had been keeping a very busy schedule on the road to Madras nearly every day. And so we were watching a herd of buffalo one day, and it was crazy. I'm actually going to show you another video very quickly. You see the buffalo there were grazing. This is early in the morning, just after sunrise, and we could see coming through the trees a giraffe.
And the giraffe was coming right for us and not slowing down. It thought we had food, or thought we were food, maybe. And if you can hear the audio, I'm like screaming like a little girl. Maybe it's good we don't have audio tonight. And then the giraffe slowed down. His two sons were with us, and his wife, Philip, was there. You can see Philip in the yellow jacket. It was a really cool experience to see a giraffe up close like that. And it's definitely good. You can't hear the audio, because I was screaming. Then we went on, and that was a private game reserve that's owned by his boss. So that was really nice of her to let us go in. We got to pat the giraffes, and we fed the giraffes, and then we also saw some elephants, too, which was pretty cool. So then, that's the end of my time in White River. Due to the tragic circumstances, I flew early down to Cape Town. So I flew, again, from Nelspruit. Actually, we drove over to Joburg. It's about a four-hour drive just between there to give you some perspective on size. And then flew all the way down to Cape Town, way down here in the Western Cape. And had a few days, again, because I was waiting for Robin and Bob to get to Cape Town. So I had like 2.5 days with nobody there. So I did do a little bit of sightseeing in Cape Town at the end of my trip, and included just a few pictures. That's from the air, actually, Cape Town. This is maybe some pictures. This is Table Mountain, Devil's Peak over here, and then this is the downtown area, the waterfront. It's a beautiful, maybe one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen. A view of the coastline there, a lot like California, Italy, a lot of really nice scenery. Ate breakfast on this bench. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. One day I did a hike up this. This is called Lion's Head. Beautiful trails around there, benches to sit. This is Lion's Head. Great place to see some scenery. A view of Cape Town from Lion's Head. And then on top of a bus, that's another view of Lion's Head. There's some really prominent peaks around there. Table Mountain with clouds pouring over the top. God's creation in Cape Town is just phenomenal. I mean, it's beautiful anywhere you go, I guess, but especially in Cape Town. I would recommend if you're ever looking for a vacation to do or a getaway, if you can swing it, Cape Town is really, really nice. Went down to the Cape of Good Hope, which it's debatable whether the Indian Ocean meets the Atlantic Ocean there. Some people say yes, some people say no. But a really famous point where it's the most southwestern tip of Africa. I did, in the time I was waiting for Bob and Robin to get back, I got to know the Bauer family. The Bauers, Robin Bauer is the preacher there. He has three kids around my age. He's married. They have a house there in Cape Town. And I spent some of the evenings with them. I went to their midweek study on Wednesday night and enjoyed meeting some of the Christians there. They have something in South Africa called a braai, B-R-A-A-I. It's the equivalent of like a cookout or a barbecue here, except it's a big social event where lots of people will come over around 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and you start a fire. You can see the wood fire they have going here. This is outside on their patio. And the fire burns for like 4 or 5 hours before they finally put the meat on. And when they put the meat on, it's just insane. They do like 5 different kinds of meat. So we had beef, pork, chicken, ostrich, kudu, all sorts of meats. Way more than, you know, you would think that a small family could eat. So it was interesting. It was kind of a lesson in contrast, I guess, that, you know, that I went to this church with the black people and you have pap and a piece of chicken, not much food. And then the white culture, I don't want to say they're extravagant because typically they eat smaller portions, but when they want to have a fun time at a party, they eat a lot of food. It actually made me think a little bit about biblical times, like the wedding feast at Cana or something like that, where you have these big feasts and all your friends are there and it's such a social event. You just really go all out. So it was fish, I think, there sitting on the table. They're about to braai the fish. It was really cool. If you ever go over to South Africa, definitely you have to go to a braai. That, you would think, looks like a church building. And I guess in a sense it is a church building. It's actually upstairs in the Bauer's house. They converted their upstairs area into a meeting place for the church there, which I thought was really, really neat. Is that Bob? I really can't tell. That might be Bob or another. Bob was there. We can't tell if that's Bob or not. Dolores, you probably know if that's Bob or not. No, that's not Bob. That is not Bob. She's shaking her head.
We did a series of lessons. Bob preached, taught a lesson on Friday night, had really good attendance. And then Saturday morning, we started another series of lessons, went through the day, had a lunch break there at the house. And then Sunday, I preached before Bob left for the airport, and then I went back the day after. I think I have another. There's the group at Cape Town. A lot of really, really great people. I wish that they could be here and meet you. I'm sure you'd love them. Of course, you see Bob there. That's definitely Bob. This is Richard Bauer. He's the eldest son of the Bowers. This is Craig, their youngest son. And then Tracy is the one taking the picture. That's why she's not there. Tracy is the one holding the camera. And then this is Craig's fiance. Crystal is her name. And I was looking for Lynn. Oh, this is Lynn. This is Robin. This is Robin Bauer. He's the preacher in Cape Town. This is in their house. This is his wife, is Lynn. Really, really nice family. Enjoyed getting to know them. I spent a few nights staying at their house. Great people. Again, we had some visitors. Some of these younger guys were visiting. And there were other Christians. This was after people had kind of been talking and kind of left. So there were more people. I'd say the group was probably about 30 to 40 people, somewhere in that range. But really, really enjoyed getting to know all of them. So you might think, okay, this is really great. You went to South Africa, but like, besides praying, what can I really do? Well, definitely, I'm not downplaying praying. Praying should be, I think, the first thing on your list. Pray every day for the brethren and other South Africans. I've totally avoided like political corruption. That's a major problem in South Africa. Their government is in such a mess. It actually made me, this sounds weird, but really thankful for our government, which is, I've haven't really felt that way before, maybe, because I often feel frustrated with our government. But relative to what the South Africans have, our government is really, really, really good. Their police are corrupt, the politicians are corrupt. It's a bad situation. So you can pray not only for the Christians, but also for the government and the police. You can pray for these people who are looking for the truth, this group that this new Christian came out of at Oakley. You can pray for them. Those would really mean a lot to them. And prayer is very, very powerful. Continued financial support to Brother Rob. He did have a secular job for a while, and they have a house that's relatively nice compared to, of course, what most of the people in South Africa have. But they rely heavily on your support, and they're not rich by any means. They're very generous with the food they have, the clothes they have. They're giving a lot of stuff away to people. And he's recently lost some support from an American congregation. And so I would encourage you to keep up your support to Brother Rob, because he's doing a really good work over there. You can send letters, cards, Facebook messages. Cheryl Buchanan is on Facebook and checks it a lot. She loves Facebook, so you can connect with her on Facebook. I'm sure she would accept your friend request if she sees that you have, you know, East Side people in common. And then I was thinking it would be really cool if some of the young people could maybe put together a package to send over to Rob and Cheryl Buchanan and Jock, their son, and tell them, you know, please distribute some of these little things to some of the people, to some of the other Christians. And it would be a good way, I think, to show some generosity and maybe get to know them. That would be really great. And I don't have this in my slides, I don't think, but they're actually planning to come over to the States next summer if they can muster up the financial support for that. And so you may even get a chance next summer to meet Rob and Cheryl, which would be really neat if you'd already written letters to them and sent them, you know, Reese's peanut butter cups. Actually, Mom was going to, she's like, what really wanted me to say this, so I'm glad I just remembered. when I was going over there, before, like a week before I went over, I was Skyping with Rob and Cheryl. I said, you know, Brother Rob, Ms. Cheryl, what could I bring you from America? Like, what can you not get over there that you'd love to have? Because they've been to the States twice. So they said, there are two things we really, really want. First thing is pretty normal. They wanted wipes for like eyeglasses, like cloths to wipe their eyeglasses with. And the second thing, they said, there's a food over in America that is amazing, and it's just our favorite food, and they don't sell it anywhere in Africa, and you know, it's too expensive to import it. And I said, okay, you know, you name it, I'll bring it. This must be some amazing food. Velveeta cheese. And if you do know me, you know that I am like cheese fanatic. Like, I love cheese. And so Velveeta is like, are you serious? Like, processed, chemically laden cheese. So I got 4 pounds of Velveeta cheese and packed it in my suitcase. It was actually in my chocolate suitcase. So it's like it was a free luggage, so it was like an extra suitcase with chocolate and cheese. And so I took that over to them, and they loved it. So I guess Jock liked me for the chocolate, and Rob and Cheryl liked me for the Velveeta. That's probably fair enough. And then seriously, you should consider visiting South Africa. I hadn't considered it until I heard Brad and Brian talk about it last summer. If you feel like that's something that you can do with your schedule, you know, that's the hardest part, I think, is just finding the time for something like that. Finding a few weeks, I would really encourage you to think about that. And maybe you're not in a point in your life, maybe you're, you know, younger right now in high school, middle school, and you're thinking, you know, I just really can't do something like that. My parents won't let me, or I don't have the resources to do that. That's okay. Like, tuck it away in the back of your mind, and 5 or 6 years, maybe 10 years down the road, maybe you'll find yourself in a situation where you have an extra 3 or 4 weeks, and you're able to do something like this. I would really encourage you to do that. The other thing that I would say, kind of aside from South Africa, is that, you know, it looks great to go and do something like this and get to see giraffes and meet the people over there. But there are a lot of people in need right here in Bowling Green. And you can make a deep impact this week, just as much of an impact this week as you could in South Africa, if you'll go out and really talk to people, if you'll share in their zeal and their fire. I think that you can have a tremendous impact even here in Kentucky. So no matter where you go, whether it's South Africa or Zimbabwe or China, Russia, you can be a light, you can be salt, no matter where you are. And so I would encourage you the rest of this week to look for opportunities to share the good news with your friends and with your family, and just strike up conversations. You think about Masha Bani, the old man who's in the hospital, you know, kind of down on his luck, had broken his leg. And he started starting up a conversation with his nurse, like I said, and look at what's happening over there just because of that one conversation that he had with the nurse who was attending to him. So you never know what could come of the conversations that you strike up with him. So I'd really encourage you to think about that. I thought about doing a question and answer period. It's right on the dot, 6 o'clock, so I respect your time. I'm not going to do any Q&A publicly here, but I'll be standing in the back. So if you have questions or comments that you'd like to offer afterwards, I'm happy to listen to those and show you more. I took 2,800 pictures, like 3,000 pictures while I was there. So this was like 70. If you want to see more pictures, we can spend the next 8 hours looking at pictures. Actually, I don't want to spend 8 hours looking at pictures, but I can send you a lot of pictures if you're interested in seeing more. And any questions you have, I'd be happy to talk to you about it. I really was blessed to have the opportunity to go spend some time with the Christians in South Africa. And I hope that, again, some of you will consider doing the same thing. And if you ever do need help getting an itinerary together or getting contacts with Rob and Cheryl or the Bowers down in Cape Town, I'd be happy to provide those to you, as I'm sure Brian and Brad would, and Allison or others, Bob, would be happy to help you to do those things. And again, just one last time, I'd really like to say thank you for the support that you guys gave me in going over there and working with these good people. I really appreciate the help and the support that you've given to me. This has been such an atypical lesson. It hasn't really even been a lesson at all, I guess. But I hope that you have seen the power of God's Word and how it has the ability to transform lives. Perhaps you've been studying God's Word and you've seen that your life is not what it needs to be. Maybe you're still living a sinful life, living in the dark, and you understand that you need to change your life and you need to become a Christian. If that's the case, you're more than welcome to come down to the front while we sing the song. Or if that makes you uncomfortable, you're more than welcome to talk to one of the men here after the closing prayer and express your need to become a Christian tonight. We have a baptistry here behind me. I think the baptism, if you decide to be baptized, will go more smoothly than the one that I showed you tonight. Don't let that scare you away from being baptized. We won't be like driving around in a truck looking for a river tonight. We have the water right here and it's ready to go. And also, of course, if you have been struggling as a Christian and have feel the need to repent and to get back on board, we can certainly pray with you and discuss those things tonight. Again, during the next song we're about to sing, you can do that, or afterwards. Listen, if you have something you need to talk to somebody about, there are lots of people here who are good listeners, who love you and want to help you, and we'd be happy to help you, whether it's during the invitation song or after services or in the middle of the night. If you call somebody, I really feel confident that these good people would be happy to help you. So if either of those is the case, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.